Congressman O'Neill, President Ford told West German Chancellor Schmidt this morning that he is in touch with the leaders of the House of Representatives about the Turkish arms vote to see what can be done to change it, to have the House reconsider. Has he been in touch with you, and can anything be done?
Well, he hasn't been in touch with me. I would doubt that it would come up in the House this week. There would be a possibility. New legislation would have to be proposed to the committee and reported out and going to the and sent to the Rules Committee and then be scheduled by the leadership. At this particular time, I would doubt that such a thing would happen.
From CBS News, Washington, a spontaneous and unrehearsed news interview on Face the Nation. With the House Majority Leader, Thomas P. O'Neill, Jr., Democrat of Massachusetts. Congressman O'Neill will be questioned by CBS News correspondent Mariah McLaughlin, Martin F. Nolan, Washington Bureau Chief of the Boston Globe, and CBS News correspondent George Herman. Face the Nation is produced by CBS News, which is solely responsible for the selection of today's guest and panel.
Mr. O'Neill, you are the House Democratic leader. You should be the man that the president ought to be in contact with. I noticed that not only the president said he would like to see what can be done to have the House reconsider, but also several Senate leaders have said that they would like to see what can be done. Do you think there's any likelihood that in the time remaining, anything can be done?
Well, first of all, the president wouldn't contact me because I was opposed to his ideas on it. I just think that our government is wrong if we yield to Turkey on this particular matter. I haven't spoken with the Speaker. I did try to contact Doc Morgan, but it's my understanding that his wife isn't well and he was visiting with her at the hospital, wherever they happen to be. At this particular minute, there is no expected program concerning the Turkish Greek situation or the embargo for the House this week.
Mr. O'Neill, as Majority Leader, you probably subscribe to the adage that all politics is local. And isn't it so in your district and many other districts that Greek Americans form a very powerful lobby for their interests, and in your district and so many others, there's no great lobby for Turkish interests? And doesn't that really explain the vote?
Well, I dislike the term Greek lobby. You know, the these are Americans who, by accident of birth, are from Greek ancestry. They have a love and devotion for America, and America being a pluralistic country, and naturally they think of the land of their ancestors. But when the members of the House are deciding an issue like this, they decide within their own mind and their own conscience, are they doing the right thing? This is an international matter. Take, for example, the Speaker and John McFaul were on one side of the issue. John Bradamus, Phil Burton, and myself were on the other side of the issue. As I was trying to read the House as to whether it would pass or not the other day, I really thought it was going to pass. I knew the tremendous amount of legwork that the President and Secretary Kissinger had done with their series of cocktail parties, luncheons, breakfast, using the Sequoia, every bit of arm-twisting that they could. And I honestly believed it was going to pass. I was amazed when 39 Republicans voted against the will and the wishes of the President. I have to say with that, the people on an issue like this, the members of Congress on an issue like this, are really voting their conscience.
Mr. O'Neill, do you have any feeling today that you're sort of being blackmailed by both Turkey and by the president? I mean, the president is overseas making statements to foreign leaders about the bad House of Representatives, and Turkey says, unless you do what we want you to do, we're going to, you know, pull out, take over your bases. You know, do you feel that's sort of a little public blackmailing from both sides?
Well, I feel as though there has to be conscience in government. I feel there has to be fidelity in government. We have laws in the books concerning arms that we give abroad or we sell abroad. They can be used for only defensive purposes. There's at least two treaties with the nation of Turkey. And there's at least three pieces of legislation with regards to defensive matters and armaments that say that when we give to a nation, it's only for the defensive purpose. And in view of the fact of the history, the Greek junta invaded Cyprus in a period of 4 days. They were knocked down. A month later, the Turks and the Greeks were in Geneva. And then in August, while the peace conference was going on, Turkey invaded 40,000 soldiers with using American arms. I think it's wrong.
Do you think that the House and this government is being subjected to blackmail by Turkey, and do you think the president's going along with that? I mean, is that the air?
I would have to say, yes, I look at it as blackmail, to be perfectly truthful. It's a harsh term to use. But I have to look at it as blackmail. But more than that, I think what we're wrong is if we allow Turkey to get this, if we condone the actions of what Turkey has done, used our weapons for offensive purposes, then it would be a pattern that would be set by the rest of the world.
Do we need those bases over there? Are they that important to us?
I can't believe that the Pentagon, the military power, having a backup plan. They must have a backup plan, number one. They used the same arguments when there were those who were opposing the junta in Greece, that they would close the air base at outside of Athens, that they would close the ports, that they would remove themselves from NATO. They did. I'm talking about the Greeks now. They did remove themselves from the NATO command. They did take the command of the air bases away from them. I think the same thing is happening in Turkey that happened in Greece. We made enemies in Greece. We're making enemies in Turkey.
You take the base business seriously.
Pardon?
You take the base business. You think we will really permanently lose these bases in Turkey?
Do I think that we'll lose them? I think that we will lose command of them. Do I think that we'll lose the knowledge that is acquired by our having the bases there? No, I don't believe that.
You mean we may still get information out of our listening posts in Turkey?
Well, this isn't for America alone. This is for the good of the Turkish nation. This is the good of NATO.
Mr. O'Neill,
this is an overall good. This is an overall good for peace of the world. I can't imagine us not being able to get this information. But even if we didn't, there's no question in my mind with the satellites that we have, with the seeing eyes and things of that, with the intelligence that we have around the world, there's no question that the Army has prepared itself, because this matter's been going on for 1 year, that we have a backup position in case the inevitable happened, and the inevitable happened this week. I don't think it's as serious as the President of the United States is proclaiming to the American public that it is. I hate to think that an issue like this is that he's becoming a little political and trying to put the blame again on the Congress, as he has been doing on about everything along the line.
Mr. O'Neill, you're the hero of a current bestseller by Jimmy Breslin about last summer's impeachment drama. It's called How the Good Guys Finally Won. He says that you and Chairman Rendino and others were the saviors of the Constitution at that particular time. But this summer, the president is using the constitutional weapon of the veto, and he seems to be getting away with it most of the time, particularly in the House. Do you really need a bad guy versus good guy confrontation? You don't do too well against a good guy, do you?
Well, now, wait a minute. There's no question that Jerry Fuller is a good fellow. Jerry Ford is a good fellow. I mean, you know, there's a lot of good fellows in this world. Jerry is a good golfing partner, doesn't know how to run the nation. His record shows that. Since he's become president of the United States, 4 million more unemployed. Inflation has raised. His program for energy is a boom for the oil barons. He has vetoed four items in the Democratic Economic Plan. There are two more items that will be pending in the Congress. One we will act upon this week, the health measure, and the educational measure that we will act upon in September. It is my opinion that the trend has turned. He lost his way, number one, on the Turkish issue. Number two, He's yielded along the line, even though with regards to the vetoes that he had. He vetoed the housing bill, and we came back within a day with 80% of the bill, and he signed that. We gave him a $5.3 billion bill. We came back with a $2.9 billion bill.
So you sound very satisfied.
The interesting factor is that if we had come out with a $2.9 billion Emergency Employment Act, or a Work and Wage Act, as I like to call it, he'd have vetoed that, and we'd have been negotiating from that point.
Mr. O'Neill.
But the truth of the matter is, the whim has turned. The trend is in the opposite way. The American public. Aren't as pleased with the vetoes as they were some time ago. They appreciate the fact that if there's a stalemate in the government, it's the president's fault, and we're about ready to overturn a couple of his vetoes.
You only overturn
the president's veto when the will of the American people says that Congress should overturn the veto, and we're going to overturn it on health, and we're going to overturn it on education. Now, let me say, he's been against the farmers, he's been against the worker, he's been against the environmentalist. He's been against the nurses and the health program. He's been against teachers and the educational. He's been against since he became there. And the image of Jerry Ford is going to change, and going to change very rapidly.
Mr. O'Neill, energy. The president has a new proposal on energy, which I take it you find unacceptable. What's going to happen is, are the price controls going to run out because you all will not accept what Mr. Ford calls a compromise?
Well, number one, I think his program is a complete disaster. I'd have to say that his program was written by the oil barons of America. They just reap so much profit.
So you won't accept it?
As an individual, I won't accept it.
And you don't think
now,
that the Congress will?
Now, the issue gets down to this. You know, so many times President Ford has said, when we've been over there talking with him, this isn't a Democratic problem, this isn't a Republican problem, this is an American problem. Truth of the matter is, there's no crisis at this particular moment with regards to energy. The crisis is going to come in 1985 to 1990. We're running out of old oil at the rate of 8% a year.
If we get new oil,
we'll probably be out of it in 30 years. There's going to be a change of energy in this country. It's going to be coal gasification, or it's going to be coal, or it's going to be nuclear, or it's going to be solar, or it's going to be thermal along the line. Now, the question comes as to the issue is...
The president's program, you're not going to accept it. Decontrols are going to run out because he will not accept.
Let me explain to you. I think his program is a disaster. Well, we had two bills in the House last week. We had the Dingell bill, but there was an amendment, the Eckhart Amendment, which would have pegged oil at 7.5 to 8.5, the new oil, and old oil at 5.25. We had the Kruger Amendment, which really lifted the cap. The president's bill is nearer to the Kruger Amendment. Now, the Kruger Amendment only lost by 18 votes.
Mr. O'Neill, please just tell me if the
Eckhart Amendment,
the Eckhart Amendment
lost by 20 votes. On Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, there will be an amendment in the House, something similar to the president's. It's going to be very close whether it passes or it doesn't pass. I can't actually say, because this is not a Democratic issue, this is an American issue. And people are going to vote their parochialism. The people from the northeast section of the country are going to oppose it because they think it's so high.
I think you have to explain what you're talking about. What kind of an amendment is it going to be, and who's going to offer it?
I would have to say, from what I understand, that John Dingell will be offering the amendment.
Yes,
it'll be similar. It'll be what they think is a compromise amendment. I don't see it as a compromise at all. But it's got a good chance of passing the House, to be perfectly truthful. So if it passes the House, I will oppose it.
What is it, a phase decontrol? What's in it?
A phase decontrol.
Over 3 years?
Over 39 months, with pegging oil at $11.50 with a nickel a month, a 5 cents a month raise. Now, that's got a chance of passing the House, although I am opposed to it. I can't speak for the Senate. I don't see the Senate accepting it. But what I do see is that if it passes the House, that the president then will not let the allocation bill die on August 31st, I believe, at that particular time. He will grant a 3-month extension. This week, We will knock down the president under the five-day limit. You know, Congress must act. We will defeat the legislation that he said, take lifting of controls. Number two, on allocation, we will send him a 90-day bill. It'll pass. The 6 months has already passed the Senate. We'll give them 90 days. And three, there's a possibility, against my opposition, that this would go to the Senate, and I think it would satisfy the president that he would give a 90-day extension.
Mr. O'Neill,
that's how I view the thing.
Mr. O'Neill, yes. In politics, you hold a sort of unique position in maintaining publicly all the time that Senator Kennedy of Massachusetts will indeed run for president, will indeed be the nominee. Now, does he tell you something differently than he tells everybody else? Or more precisely, is he lying to you or is he lying to everybody else?
Well, that's a very harsh way to put it.
It certainly is. Really.
Well, I talked to Teddy Kennedy last night. I called the senator's home to wish his mother a happy 85th birthday, and I talked to Ted. I said, "How's my candidate for the Senate doing?" And we
Senate.
Laughed.
Oh, I'm aware of that.
We laughed, and we talked about various things. The situation, as I look at it, is this. I believe that Ted Kennedy wants to be a candidate for the presidency of the United States. The family is strongly opposed to Ted Kennedy running. The family is strongly knitted together. Everywhere I go all over the country, I find support for Kennedy. There's no question in my mind he could be nominated on the first ballot. There's no question that he could be elected. It wasn't too long ago that I was at a supper for honoring Mary Lasker, and I was seated at the same table with Mrs. Kennedy. I know the feeling of Mrs. Kennedy, but in our dialogue, she said, it'll be Ted's judgment to make up his own mind.
Well,
I think that Ted Kennedy will be a candidate for president of the United States. You're asking for my views and my opinion. I said, yes,
well,
I think Ted Kennedy will be a candidate.
I'm asking you as a leading Democrat, what does that say about the Democratic process that you have these 30 primaries in which all of these guys go out there and try to run like mad, and then you say, well, the system doesn't really work. We have to crown somebody.
No, I don't agree with that at all. You know, I think that squabble within the party always helps the party, number one. Number two, we have about 30 primaries. Number three, there are four of those primaries along the line that a Secretary of State has the right to put on the ballot anybody's name that he believes could be a candidate for president of the United States. I don't believe that there's such a thing as a draft, but I do believe that somewhere along the line you're going to see Ted Kennedy's name on the ballot, and as I'm talking to you, I believe that Ted Kennedy's a candidate for the presidency of the United States.
You said something similar last time, though, too, didn't you?
Oh, you and I have discussed this thing many times. About a week or 10 days ago, as I was leaving him, I said, Ted, do you want me to say that you're not a candidate for the presidency? He says, keep me alive, Tip. Listen, I think he wants to be a candidate. I think it's the pressure of the family at the present time. But the family is going to... The family says, Ted, it's for you to make the decision. Now, what do I feel? You're asking me my opinions. My opinion is that Ted Kennedy is going to be a candidate for the presidency of the United States.
Mr. O'Neill,
And I know him fairly well.
Could I ask you about Senator Kennedy's obvious opposition if he does what you say he will do? Mr. Ford, I take it that you don't think he's the niftiest president we've ever had.
I don't think that President Ford has a chance of being reelected, even though the polls at this time show about 50%.
Why do you say that?
Well, maybe it's a hackneyed phrase, but let me say this. His philosophy and his thinking is such that he would bring you back to the dark ages. He'd bring you back to the days of the high button shoe, the lamplighter, the celluloid collar, the days of McKinley. That was his 25 years in Congress, being an affable, friendly fellow. His philosophy is about as far to the right as you can get it. He came to the Congress with no plan as far as the economy is concerned. He came to the House with no plan as far as housing is concerned. I just can't imagine Gerry Ford being reelected as President of the United States, because the economy, the campaign will be on the economy. and the economy will not be good. Any turn in the economy that has happened up to date is because of the actions of the Democratic Party and sticking the tax bill down his throat.
What about his foreign policy, and particularly what about Henry Kissinger in light of what has happened with Turkey? You think Henry Kissinger is a great asset to Mr.
Well,
Ford?
Well, I don't want to say whether he's an asset or not, but I think he's wedded to Ford, and I think that he'll remain with Ford through the remainder of his administration.
You think he's done a good job? You think he's done a bad job?
I have thought he'd done a good job along the line. I think he messed up the Turkey situation. You know, you go to the record of anybody, you can be critical of him. But on the overall, I think he has. I think he's done a respectable job.
Mr. O'Neill, why did the House?
Let me just say this about Henry Kissinger. He's losing his punch as far as the House was concerned. There was a time when we could have a briefing and call the Secretary of Commerce or the Secretary of any one of the secretaries. If you call the Secretary of Labor up, you were fortunate if you got 25 members to attend. To call the Secretary of Commerce up, you were lucky to get 30 members.
That might say more about the Congress than it does
about
the Secretary.
But if you called up Secretary Kissinger, who was Secretary of State, he'd draw 250 to 300. He'd mesmerize them. The colloquy would be terrific. It was an enjoyable day. He didn't pull any punches, and the members had a lot of respect for him. I'd say that's waning in the House.
Why did the House leadership go through this elaborate minuet with the CIA committee and Messrs. Harrington and Nedzi? That was kind of a spectacle.
Well, first of all, in reviewing it, it was a mistake when Nedzi was appointed as chairman, but I have to say the Speaker, Albert, didn't know at that time that he had had 200 meetings with the CIA in his duties as oversight chairman of the Armed Services Committee. And Nedzi asked for it, and the fellow that was going to be chairman was called in by the Speaker, and he acquiesced to allow to step aside and to allow Nedzi to be chairman. Following that, there was an action by the Armed Services Committee with regards to Mike Harrington. Mike was placed on the committee by virtue of the fact that he was the sponsor of the resolution to investigate the CIA. Mike brought out the inequities, the wrongdoings of the CIA, but he apparently, when he could get no satisfaction, he leaked it to the press.
Mr. O'Neill, it says something about the style of leadership, what Mr. Albert did in appointing Mr. Nedzi, sort of because he wanted to be on there. It does not sound like the strong speakership that perhaps you and others seem to...
Well, I thought he was knowledgeable, and there had been no criticism of Nedzi up to that time. And so in view of the fact that he did have some knowledge of it, it seemed like the logical thing to do was to put him on the committee.
And therefore you had to demolish the old committee in order just to get rid of one man, Michael Harrington. The old system of reward and punish as the strong speakership...
What is the purpose of the action that we did? The purpose of the action that we did was that the committee was in a stalemate. Now, Mike Harrington is my friend. He brought to the public the problem of the CIA. I don't condone the manner in which he did it, but I do respect the fact that it was brought to the public, and there is a committee. In order to get the committee functioning, we had to have a new committee, and Otis Pike is the chairman, and Aspen, who's out of the same cut of cloth as Mike Harrington is, they'll do a great job. In January of next year, they'll report. They will have accomplished the purpose of investigating the CIA, so the task will be done.
Mr. O'Neill, there's just a little bit of time left, but how do you get over? You say that the American people are going to see that Gerry Ford is a do-nothing president. How are you going to get over that you, the Congress, does anything? The majority of people just see you as incapable of overriding vetoes, pass great legislation but can't push it through. How do you get that over?
That's the history of the Congress. You know, the 93rd Congress was just completed.
Well, let's talk about this.
Well, wait a minute. Now, historians and congressional watchers say it's the greatest in 100 years. You know, the Democrats haven't had a defeat in 20 years as far as the Congress is concerned. Carl Albert is an excellent speaker. We're in the first quarter of a ball game. By the record of comes up in November of 1976, we'll have an overwhelming victory again, and the issues before the public will be the issue of economy, and the only one that has done anything about it is the Democrats. And up to this minute, the Democrats have a great record, and the only thing that has turned around the economy or has... The recession has bottomed out only because of the action of the Congress of the United States. And eventually, the people will know about it. The people in health know of Ford's action. The people,
we went through those earlier, Congressman.
Yes, they all appreciate it.
About 20 seconds we have left. Since, based on your loyalty and close association with Speaker Albert, could you tell us when he's going to retire in 10 seconds?
No, I really don't know whether he's a candidate or not. If he isn't a candidate, you can be sure that I'll be a candidate for Speaker.
Thank you very much, Mr. O'Neill, prospective Speaker, if Mr. Albert should retire, for being with us today.
I regret we haven't more time.
Face the Nation. Thank you.